This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Once again, he can't help himself. He takes control of everything within his reach. So here we go again.
This was Chris. No, this one. I was thinking Back in Black, kind of like a Donald Trump thing, but we talked about it being hump day, and suddenly we're subjecting your hundreds of thousands of million listeners to Shock G and the Humpty Dance. I mean...
And we talk about the uncertainty of Donald Trump. How dare they?
Yeah,
the uncertainty of Wednesdays here on the Newell Norman Show.
I need a personal care. What are those called? Those bunny rabbits you carry around with you? I need one because of this show.
So DJ Camino React. Wait. What is your name again? DJ
El Camino. El Camino.
DJ El Camino.
Front is like a car. Yeah. Back is like a truck. Yeah.
Absolutely, DJ El Camino. You know what today is?
Besides the day
shame
after
on
the day
you.
After.
Shame. It's National Nacho Day today. Come on.
I did not know it's National Nacho Day today.
You should know that. You should treat your staff to nachos today.
Well, I'm going to. That's going to make me, you know, that's actually a really good idea because I need some. You know, the staff is kind of iffy on me here at Greater New Orleans, Inc., so I'm saying order nachos.
Absolutely. Super Bowl work continues. T-minus 95 days. I was teasing about you the other day as I was talking to Jay Cicero. I was going to call you and ask you to do the intro into my interview of him about how many days are left. He's like, please don't.
Yeah, he's not that big of a fan of the whole countdown thing. But I find it, look, I think it's just you have to put yourself under the stress because if you don't, you look up and you've lost a week. So you have to – we're in the mode now where we're trying to squeeze, you know, something out of every second, and it just has to be the mode. It's kind of like you're having, you know, the Christmas party, and it's 1 hour before the guests arrive, and it's just – it's time. But what's really exciting now, Newell, is – you're starting to see this stuff manifest around the city. It's like, you know, it's like it's before the Christmas party, the food's in the oven. Now you're starting to smell it and it smells good. Like, for example, I was going to our weekly meeting at City Hall today, and I'm going into City Hall. It smelled like a pool. It smelled like chlorine. And I love the smell of chlorine in the morning. What it is, or what it was, is that there are these drones outside City Hall right now power washing the building. And that might be normal in, like, normal world, but here, this is something that hasn't happened in, I don't know, in years. I mean, it's like art conservation. They're discovering, like graffiti from a decade ago that had been covered up. And it's, you know, and I don't think it's necessarily a Banksy or anything, but the building looks beautiful, and the sign's getting redone, and... it's, you know, I never thought I'd get thrilled by power washing, but I guess that's what it means to be middle-aged and kind of in government.
Careful, the Historic Preservation Society may step in. There may, it may be historic. You never know.
Yeah,
this building.
I don't
want to talk about it too much.
I know. I think City Hall, bless it. It would have been great in Miami about 50 years ago, but I don't know. I think charity should have become the new City Hall, but that idea never really happened.
But, Michael, when we talk about 95 days, it's getting close. Time's going by fast. I mean, you know, every day is another day behind, and it's interesting to see. I know that one of the observations that you made is that the city is issuing a construction moratorium, but that's not going to impact this work as they try and get themselves orderly, I guess, leading into the holiday season, Mardi Gras, as well as the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's all. You know, the press release that went out was frankly, it was overly broad in its language. And you know, we were fielding phone calls all morning. But basically, anything that is ongoing, whether it's IJRR work or Sewer and Water Board work or DPW work or lighting or dome or Super Bowl work, that all continues. Energy work continues. What they just want to make sure is that after Thanksgiving, nobody starts a new project that could end up train wrecking with an existing project or causing a problem for the game. So it's actually meant to be narrowly tailored, and as you said, to prevent kind of conflicts and mayhem. And so I think another release went out that kind of cleaned it up a little bit.
Absolutely. I know that we are still looking at the impact of Taylor Swift. Any new numbers, anything that you're hearing about that?
Well, I talked to Doug Thornton yesterday, who, you know, is with ASM that runs the Dome, about their experience, and he said that it was just, a triumph as a trial and as itself. I think probably the most significant thing relative to Taylor Swift, in my mind, was that the Dome was able to support 65,000 people, you know, live streaming or videoing for 3.5 hours. So, you know, there have been issues in the past with internet connectivity in the Dome, and apparently now, you know, we've got, you know, battleship-level internet. Also, the flow in and out of the Dome, they were very pleased with that, very pleased with the way the concessions worked. They liked the ride share. So I think the Dome came through Taylor Swift well. And actually, our Taylor Swift experience in New Orleans was so positive and so broadly appreciated that I actually was on Canadian Broadcasting a couple of days ago because they're about to get Taylor Swift in Toronto, and they wanted to know what they could learn from our experience. I mean, it's like being interviewed after surviving a hurricane. You know, right. What was it like? What can we how can we best prepare to be resilient in the face of Taylor Swift? But
get ready.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, like sparkle up and buckle down. I don't know, but it was Taylor Swift was excellent, and I think the numbers, if you actually do the numbers back of the envelope, Newell, between the ticket sales, between the estimate of everybody spending about $1,300 on hotel, food and beverage, and then a little lanyap, you get close to $500 million, close to $500 million of spend, which is Super Bowl level big.
So, Michael, still waiting on some results to come in from last night's election. If it turns out the way that a lot of folks are predicting, Republicans gain control of the House, the Senate, and the executive branch of government, the presidency, we have the Speaker of the House and the majority, Representative Steve Scalise. Things got to bode well for this state. And Jeff Landry, who's very close to the president, to add to that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, regardless of who you voted for and what your political affiliations are, if you look at this objectively, this election was a good result for Louisiana. Like you said, it's fantastic for us to have a strong ally in the White House, and Governor Landry has a personal relationship with President Trump. You know, really, regardless of which way the House ends up going, we're still going to be well represented. Obviously, if it stays under Republican control, we've got Mike Johnson and Steve Scalise. But if it flips, then you're going to have Troy Carter, who's going to be very senior in the House, and he's positioned to be in a leadership position in that chamber. So we're good either way there. Somebody asked me this morning, they said, you know, what does this mean for the economy of Louisiana? And I said, well, from my experience from Trump 1, I think it actually is a very good thing, because the biggest bugaboo for the economy, and particularly for energy, and as well, and I want to note this for everybody, as well for energy transition and low-carbon energy projects like carbon capture, is that permitting and speed of government has been a real hindrance. And one thing was very clear the first time around, and I see no reason why it's not going to be even more so this time, is that the Trump administration is going to want to speed things up, get rid of bureaucracy, and move fast. And that will be good for all of our projects, but particularly big energy projects, including these carbon capture projects for which we now have primacy. So that's good news. And then the last one, which is more of a Louisiana-specific, is Representative Joe Ogeron put up Constitutional Amendment 1. Really excited that that passed, thanks to the Louisiana voters. And this means that, just like with oil and gas, now when we have revenues that come in from offshore wind production in Louisiana, that's going to come back to Louisiana and be dedicated to a coastal protection and restoration fund. And that's good news for, you know, for the future of our coast.
Yeah. Any other conclusions you draw from last evening?
You know, I think that, I think that when you start looking at the results and you start seeing who actually voted for Trump versus for Harris, there's a lot more unanimity across the crosstabs, across race, class, gender, than I think people expected. And so to me, it says that whereas maybe we thought that in 2016 Donald Trump was kind of a historical fluke, maybe what we're seeing is a realignment in American politics. And if you kind of step back, we tend to go through these 30 or 40 year cycles of a political idea. It was the New Deal, coming out of the Depression, and that was kind of what everybody had to align to. And then there are also pressures around communism after World War, that time too, that kind of balanced the power between labor and management. Then we went into kind of a neoliberal period, which was more about globalization, more about free flow of trade. And that probably started to hit the skids around 2008 when we had the economic crisis. And so it might just be that we're seeing this, what feels like all this tumult and upheaval is actually a realignment within the parties and with American politics. And we're moving into some new construct, some new paradigm. I'm not sure what it is, but it clearly is going to be more protectionist, more populist, and represent some type of reversion of focus on the working class of America, because ultimately it was those frustrations among the working class, I think, that drove this election result.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost as if we've come to the realization that there's a limit to what we can be, right, at some level. We want to be all things to all people, but that's not necessarily financially achievable. And in fact, I had this conversation with Joe Geruso earlier about whether the city is prepping itself to wean itself off of a lot of the grants. Almost half the budget comes from the federal government. And, you know, if you have the House, the Senate, and the presidency looking at the federal debt structure, albeit there were some things that Trump did in his first presidency because of COVID that increased that number, it seems as though that there's a reengineering of the outlook and what they're looking at relative to that, which is going to mean that there's going to be some cuts as to what the federal government's willing to finance. And we better get our budget right, you know, our organization right sized and priorities in place, or otherwise we will be behind that proverbial financial eight ball. Your thoughts?
I guess I have mixed thoughts on that, because on one hand, I do think that the de facto strategy of a lot of Louisiana, going back to Katrina, which has been to rely on disaster funding and grants, is obviously a flawed strategy long term, and we have to eat what we kill as entities. But I think when you look at what's going to happen in D.C., the old kind of traditional, Mitt Romney or Goldwater Republican model is kind of gone. The idea of being fiscally conservative, of really kind of watching the budget, trying to run a surplus. And if you look at both the Biden and the Trump administrations, the money was just flowing. And in fact, if you look at what's happening with, with the bond market right after, two things happened in the market right after the election. So one is that the stock futures went up, and that's because I think people are anticipating, tax cuts, and that's good for equities. But also the bond market went up, and my understanding is that that happens when the thought is that the government's going to start borrowing a lot more money, and so that's why the bond yields went up. And so I do totally agree that we have to really look seriously at our almost billion-dollar budget in New Orleans and think about right-sizing it, because now that I'm kind of quasi in government, it's clear there's enormous room for efficiencies. But I don't know that we're going to see I don't know that we're going to see that much focus on the deficit and on spending coming out of any administration now, because it's just politically too attractive to spend money.
Well, it wasn't in the too distant past that we lost a Speaker of the House over that very issue, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, distant past where Ross Perot, took 20% of the vote talking about it feels like, it feels like ancient history. But this is going to be I think a very different Trump administration than the first time. If you kind of go back to 2016, Trump didn't expect he was going to win, right? He had no transition team. It was kind of a fluke. He was surrounded by very kind of traditional Republicans, like the Rex Tillerson types. Mm-hmm. This is a different man, a different level of experience, a different agenda this time. And, my hope, and who the heck knows what's going to happen, is that some of the better aspects of what we've seen in Donald Trump, which is his, not just willingness, but affinity for challenging conventional ideas, which need to be challenged, that's what we see more of and less of things that are end up being, self-destructive or hurtful. It's definitely a realignment, and I think I go back to kind of my earlier statement. This definitively shows that Donald Trump's greatest strength is reading the room like a great vaudevillian, like a great orator, almost like a great professional wrestler. And the room has changed. And that's why he's back again.
Well, it's interesting when you go back and you look in history relative to the pandemic and some of the things that he said and some of the things that he desired, and he succumbed to his inner circle on some of those issues. His original position was, in fact, correct, and he was vindicated, relative to opening up the economy, that we were going to decimate this country. The debt structure would change, things would change, we wouldn't come back very easily because of those changes. It's exactly what happened. And no one wanted to listen to him at the time.
Yeah. So, and I think this time he's going to be listening, probably to a much smaller and much more loyal, inner circle. We're definitely going to see tax cuts. We're definitely going to see tariffs go up, which I have very mixed feelings about, because I think that it is right that we have to respond to the competition from China, but. Tariffs end up basically being a tax on consumers. We're definitely going to see a crackdown on the border, and I don't think anybody has a problem really with that, because the way the border was mismanaged probably is the number one thing, or the number two thing behind declining real wages that undid the Biden-Harris ticket. And I think the question you know, is if he does all of these things, is what's it going to do to inflation? And if he cuts taxes and raises tariffs, are we going to, you know, get ourselves into an economic pickle that we're going to have to respond to? But
he's got an incredible opportunity to either redefine or refine his legacy, right? And not many people are given that opportunity. I mean, this goes back to Grover Cleveland, the last time that something like this happened. And it'd be interesting to see whether or not he's thinking along those lines. I was kind of shocked in the way that he actually shared the stage last night and had other people come up and speak. I think there are a lot of people on the stage that were actually thrown for a loop by that actually occurring, because you don't see that much. It was interesting.
No, that is interesting. And, we'll see what it is. But it all comes back to Carville and his advice to Clinton. It was the economy. And so it was really the economy and immigration, which is linked to the economy in people's minds and real wages, that push people over. And I think that fundamentally people felt frustrated and disrespected, and they voted to reflect that.
Yep, absolutely, no doubt. All right, we're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
It's better.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. And, Michael, we have a special guest.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be welcoming all the way from Cambridge, England, the founder and managing partner of DACA, Digital Age Quality Assurance, the newest member of The Beach, a sandbox for collaboration out at UNO.
And that would be Ben Wibberly, founder and managing partner. Ben, welcome to the show.
Cool. Thank you, guys. Pleasure to be here today. Thank you for having me. Michael, thank you for such a wonderful introduction.
So, Ben, you guys are in the video game quality assurance business. Y'all just made this big announcement about being out at the beach at UNO. Can you tell us a little bit about what your company actually does. When I read about it, I was like, okay, I've never been a gamer. I'm 66 years old. I've come from a generation that you put one of those gadgets in my hand, and I don't know what to do with it, to be quite honest with you. So what is it that you guys do?
Okay, that's a great question, Neil. So just to give a bit of context around it, and I'm sure Michael is more than aware of this, but not many people know that the global video game industry is over $180 billion global business. And wow. So, you know, that it takes more revenue than music, TV, and movies combined. So when you're seeing the games that are released today, you're basically seeing some very big bets that are being made, right? But people don't make those big bets without going out and qualifying whether or not the product, the game, is actually going to sell in the first place. So what DAQA does is we focus on what we call the quality of the game, the quality of the release of the game. So when the game's released, the players, they get the maximum enjoyment out of the experience of, you know, what it is that they bought. So games testing, or, you know, games quality assurance, has evolved. So really what we're looking at today and sort of what DAQA does is, the first part, we have sort of four key parts to our business, if you like, Noor. So the first part of that is what we call player insights and research. So if you're coming up with a concept for a game, because you don't just, you know, wake up in the morning and think, oh, I'm going to make a game, right? You're talking, you know, in a lot of cases, millions of dollars to be able to do that. You need to basically be able to qualify, right, is this going to resonate with the audience? Is there a place for this, you know, within the existing landscape? Because there are so many games out there. There's like thousands that are released every year. So what do you have that makes you spend, like, what's compelling, right? So The first part of what we do is we provide services that is essentially player insights. So researching into communities, getting those data points, just basically make sure, is there a fit for it in the market? And then the second part of what we do, which is what I think that a lot of people think that video game testing is, because when I tell people, oh, I'm a video game tester, they're like, oh, you must play video games for a living all day. And it's not, it's way more than that. It's so deep these days. And like I was saying, like, the amount of revenue that's involved with it. So the next part of what we do, or a big key component to making a successful game, and you know, you can talk to any game developer, they will say this, is they talk about finding the fun, right? So you've got to find the fun, which is a very nebulous concept to come up with. So what we're doing, when we're the second part of our business, is basically playtesting, or UX, usability, right? And that will be people actually playing the game, providing feedback on the game, you know, what we call like difficulty arcs, story curves, whatever that happens to be, making sure the design is durable enough, it is actually enjoyable. Then the next part is the development testing that we do, the DevQA piece that we do, and that's all the checks and balances that have to go into, does the game actually work? Does it function as it's meant to? So effectively, you're making sure it works, you're wrinkling all the bugs out before it goes out live. So we have that test piece there. And then the other piece of that as well is, because games are live these days, you're talking about enormous communities. So part of what we do is what we call like live QA. And the live QA part of it is, you don't just put a game out, you know, with all games are live effectively. All games have online components. So you don't just put those out in the wild and be like, oh, it'll work. Like, games break in like weird ways when you put them online, whether it's, you know, somebody in Paris on one ISP or somebody in Louisiana on another. They break in all sorts of different ways. So we check for all of that stuff as well. That's where our sort of big test network comes from. We've been remote first up until now, and, you know, we'll talk a bit about like why NOLA, but we do that. And then the final part of the business is sort of tools that facilitate like what it is that we do, right? Because at the moment, it's very much, you know, you find the bug, you take the bug, you write the bug down, you type the bug in. We're working on tools that augment that like record what the tester's doing, records the button inputs, shows the performance. And because it's recording what the inputs are, it's transcribing what it is that the testers are talking about. That then gives us the ability to very quickly like replay, grab the bugs, put the video of the bug into the bug databases and those sort of things. And then I was trying to come up with some fun facts for you guys. So one of the ones that I thought with sort of the second part of the tools is, we're building out tools and we're working with others that will listen and find out what the players are talking about and what the bugs that they're reporting are. So this is the fact that I found this out last year. EAFC, which is the big soccer game that Electronic Arts made, and a friend of mine, I was visiting Vancouver, and I dropped in to see him, and he runs the testing for FIFA, for EAFC, excuse me. And one of the things that he said was, apart from all like the amazing amounts of code automation and those sort of things that goes on, they have 500 people testing that product. Now,
wow.
When they release the season update once a year, the players rack up more playtime in the first minute than those 500 people spend for the entirety of the year testing it. So your players will find the bugs first. So we have tools and stuff that we're building to deal with that. So it's a bit of a long answer, but I wanted to sort of give you some context around it.
Now, Ben, I mean, it's incredibly interesting. I have to imagine that there's the possibility of a huge AI component to all of this as well, right?
Yeah, you do have a big AI component to it. There's no doubt about that. We're seeing a lot of emerging tools. I mean, if you think about video games, and I know you said that you didn't play, but you know, maybe some of the listeners do. You know, when you're inside the game and you've got what we call NPCs, like non-player characters, so even the characters that are there moving around inside of the game, you know, to an intent and purpose, that is AI already. But games is very much into that. You're seeing a lot of generative AI. I believe it's more augmented. And by augmented, what I mean is, it's tools that then help the human right. beings to work faster, work smarter. And that's what we're seeing a lot of, rather than, hey, this AI is going to come in and play your game and replace the testers, if you like.
So you really have raised my curiosity. Why New Orleans for you guys?
So this guy, Michael, I don't know if you remember, but I was just, it's Michael's fault, basically.
That happens a lot. Good, bad, indifferent.
Michael, I have to say thank you to Josh Blaine and Grady Fitzpatrick. They brought me here. There's an event that GNO put on called Game Fest. And so I came here in 2017. It was my first time visiting. I used to live in Los Angeles. So I lived in Los Angeles for 17 years. Hopefully your listeners don't hate me for that. But anyway, so I came to visit New Orleans. And honestly, the place absolutely blew me away. It absolutely blew me away, right? The friendliness of the people, the integration, like how friendly like local government was. And so for us, when we're looking at it, I actually walked away. I got back on the plane. I remember because I had some really good oysters in the Delta Lounge. And I got back on the plane, and I was convinced that if we were going to build, you know, sort of a North American facility, that the optimum location would be New Orleans. And I'll tell you a bit why I think that is. I think that the time zone is very advantageous for us, right? A lot of the big publishing clients or the big sort of game studios, if you like, they have a lot of facilities. They have a lot of setups on the West Coast. They also, you know, you've got a lot in the UK and a lot in the Europe. So this central time zone is very, very good for dealing with that. And then, you know, what we saw here in terms of like the local talent that's available, the amount of schools, colleges, universities that are here, we also knew that we would be able to find the right sort of people to help us, because what we see this doing is, like I said, we were remote first and, you know, we've got folks all over the place to really help bolster that as our network operations hub and then grow our global and to continue to grow New Orleans, but also grow our global business as a result of that.
So, obviously, you talk about local talent. What is it that you guys are actually looking for or looking to attract?
That's a great question. So for me, what are we looking for, right? We're looking for people who can be what we call like testers, quality analysts, right, to actually be doing some of the hands-on work with, you know, making sure the games function, our dev QA sort of business. The other part of the facility that we see here is that playtesting piece. So it'd be a playtesting lab. So people come in and like give the feedback on what they think about the games. Just so everybody's really clear, everybody gets paid for everything, right? We're not asking for anything for free. So creating those testing jobs, doing the playtesting here. And then also I think that there's, an opportunity for us as well for like software engineering. So, the schools will help with that. Really what we look for, and, you know, we look for we have a very diverse talent base, right? I think people think that, oh, you know, I need to be a really hardcore gamer, or, oh, you know, I don't have a degree, you know, like not everybody's path is college, right? So really what we're looking for is we're looking for dedicated people who are genuine, you know, ambitious, who, you know, hungry, who want to learn. You know, we provide the full training sort of piece there. And just in general, the one for me is like great communication skills, right? If you've got good communication skills, like spoken, like oral and written, then you're perfect. But, you know, that passion for having that career, that's what we hope to enable, and that's what we hope to bring to the teams, the employees that we have here.
And I got to imagine a strong curiosity as well, right? It seems as though a lot of this, you're almost an investigator. You're in there and you're fooling around and trying to find
things. Yeah, you spend a lot of time. Sorry. Yes, the strong curiosity, that natural curiosity, and that, like, the why, right? Oh, that's broken. Yeah. Why? How do I reproduce that, right?
Absolutely. What's that book called? Start with Why.
Start with Why. Yeah, I'm a big fan of that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So how would you define success here for you?
Success. I think that what success looks like for us is to build out the hub, right, to ensure, to create the jobs, right? We're going to create the jobs. Yeah. There's more and more content. You know, there's more needs with the tech and everything else. I hope that we can sort of almost become, if you like, we can sort of become the bedrock. If there's already a community, there's already a games development community here, but, you know, we could sort of develop that bedrock. If you look back, I mean, this is obviously like my area of specialization, right? If you look back and you look at like where Montreal was over 20 years ago, there was no games industry there. And when people started moving in with, you know, the tax credits and that sort of stuff, that was what grew the bit. But what grew it was having like the games testing there. It's a great training ground for, you know, developing talent and those sort of things. So really what I would hope the sort of the point that we get to in terms of success is hiring local, jobs creation and job creation that we continue to have happy clients, right? Like we measure success on, client success. And, yep. You know, the job creation piece, for me, it's quality, not quantity, right? We're not here to sort of, you know, create some sort of meat market or, you know, we just rev through people. Can we help people? Can we build that up? And can we help them build their careers?
Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for making Michael Heck look good. He needs that every again. This segment has been incredibly intriguing for me. I had no idea. I mean, I knew the industry was big, but I didn't realize how big. I mean, it is huge.
Yes, sir.
And as you describe it, I mean, it's just so interesting and just so rewarding to know that you guys decided to move here in the city of New Orleans. And we thank you for same and wish you much success. Ben Weberly, founder and managing partner of DACA, a video game quality assurance company that's opening here in our great city. We'll be right back. Stay with us, folks. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc. Michael, I've received a number of texts asking about Ben's contact information for his company. The way you spell his name is B-E-N, obviously, Ben, W-I-B-B-E-R-L-E-Y, and it's D-A-Q-A is the name of the company. And I guess they can go to GNO Inc. and get further information.
Yeah, you know, honestly, just give them my email address, just mhecht@gnoinc.org, and if they want to get connected, just email me, and I'll get them to the right. I'll get them to Ben and to his HR people. But you know, he's been doing this for two or three decades. He's a lovely guy. He's the real deal. So this is not a fly-by-night operation. And I think what Ben said that was most interesting is he referred to Montreal. And that's one of the places that we look at as a model, because it's true that when we were growing up, there was nothing like this in Montreal. And now it is one of the premier gaming and software centers in North America, as well as having a great French heritage. So I love being compared to Montreal and getting these kind of world-class global companies like DACA and guys like Ben here is good. And look, whatever Grady and I did back in 2017, I remember talking to Ben. I think we were out at Jack's Brewery, just like, eating oysters and drinking a beer. I didn't screw it up. So but you see, Newell, like people say, like, how do I like the Super Bowl stuff? And what's interesting is that the Super Bowl stuff is so satisfying because a deal like DACA, that started, you know, 7-8 years ago, and now it's coming to fruition. Filling a pothole can happen in a matter of weeks, and so It's nice having the balance of planting the seeds versus, you know, just going and being able to harvest today.
Well, our expectation is a matter of days, not weeks, so just not to put any pressure on you, but that's what we'd like
fine.
To see.
That's fine. Let's let our
you know, upon your exit
well, I want
from
you to know
this part of your life.
Well, but listen, talking about being responsive, while we were on break, I just went and ordered nachos for the entire office from Johnny Sanchez. So I don't know whether or not today actually is National Nacho Day, but from your lips to Johnny Sanchez's ears.
Absolutely. Anything that I can do for your staff, because they're wonderful. They have to work hard each and every day to make you look good, Michael Heck.
Yeah, it is a Sisyphean task. That's true. So some melted cheese will make it better.
I have to tell you, you know, we have great segments here. This with Ben was really intriguing to me. I mean, someone from the outside who doesn't really know much about game, I had no idea the breadth and depth of how large that industry truly is. I mean, it was really interesting.
Yeah, it's enormous. And all these industries, too, so film, music, video games, they're kind of converging. So, for example, if you remember Kerry Ganofsky from High Voltage Software, they just programmed their latest game, which is a massive Snoop Dogg concert, but it happens inside the video game. I don't know what that means,
really?
But I think I need one of those THC sodas to figure it out.
No doubt. Michael Heck, as always, we appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great week, my friend, and a great weekend.
You too. Thanks so much, Sean.
All right. That's Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO, Inc. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We'll talk about last night's election results. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.